to the Fremantle Press podcast. Today we're recording on Wallalup in Whadjuk Noongar Boodja and also on Menang Noongar Boodja. I'd like to acknowledge our first storytellers, along with Noongar elders past and present. I'm Georgia Richter, Fremantle Press publisher, and today I'll be speaking with author Giles Watson. Giles is a writer and teacher of English and drama who lives in Albany, Kinjarling, Western Australia. Born in England, he migrated to Australia at the age of one, grew up in Canberra and returned to live in Britain for 18 years, completing a doctoral thesis on British cultural and religious history during the Second World War. There, he grew fascinated with ancient landscapes, writing prolifically in response. In 2013, he returned to Western Australia. Yunjadup, a wetland summer diary, chronicles his quest to gain a sense of belonging in his new home. Your book is called Yunjadup, a wetland summer diary. Where is Yunjadup, and how is it that your diary also contains a great many poems?
Sure. Well, Yunjadup is a constellation of freshwater wetlands on the southern coast of Western Australia between Albany, Kinjarling and Denmark. And it was formerly a potato farm. The farmer would drain the wetlands every year to grow potatoes in their soil. But one year he couldn't get his tractor through the reeds and he gave up farming it. Despite the farming, Yunjadup is an extraordinarily biodiverse place. And sometime after it was abandoned by the farmer, endangered Australasian bitterns were heard booming at the site. The Wilson Inlet Catchment Committee and BirdLife Australia and the Denmark Bird Group set up an appeal for donations so that the site could be purchased and protected for its wildlife value. And that was when I heard about it. I first visited the place in winter, and the farm track that runs between the wetlands was underwater with tadpoles swimming over it. And I got permission to visit Yunjadup regularly. There was insect life everywhere, and the bird song was really astounding. I'd been struggling to reconnect with the landscape after nearly two decades in England, but I felt the instinctive pull of Yunjadup and realised that a book was coming. And I was also struggling with chronic fatigue, and the wetlands were becoming a place where I seemed to be able to recharge. When I got eye to eye with the damselflies, the writing started to flow. And large portions of it were actually composed on location. I wrote other parts at home when my illness made it impossible to get there. Those parts became poems and essays about my longing for Yunjadup itself. At the wetland, I penciled some of the writing into manuscript books, and more of it was dictated onto a voice recorder. Then I got into the habit of switching on the camera on my mobile phone and filming it. Filming what I was seeing and narrating. I would then take all of that home, type it up and rework it. It was often surprising how little reworking was needed, though. I think there was a freshness and immediacy to those initial observations that needed to be preserved. And I think poetry was totally essential to the process. There was a sense of awe and wonder that builds through the narrative, and poetry was the way of getting that across. One of the most delightful moments happened when I'd climbed my favourite peppermint tree, which overhangs Murringup Creek, which is the southernmost wetland. I had my voice recorder running, and a sacred kingfisher appeared in the branches of a tree very near to me. The bird started living up to its name, fishing. It would fly down and hit the water and then return to its own favourite branch. I watched it thrashing its prey before swallowing it. And all the time this was happening, I was dictating the poem in a whisper, kind of like David Attenborough and his gorillas, only much less dangerous.
Would you share one of your poems with us?
Sure. So this poem was written on the 3rd of December 2023. I lie down on the grass, too drained to really live, too stretched to pick a pencil up. A fantail above is tweaking insects in the tree, tilting, looking down, and cocking her sagacious head, as in my dressing gown, I wonder how I ever stood or raised the will to be. This birak, she has laid three eggs, and fledged and flew all three. She splays her waving tail in her peppermint's green crown. I feel this bursting in my head and stir to write it down.
So Giles, one of the first lines in this poem, it says that you're too drained to really live. And I'm very aware of the kind of double sense of meaning in those few words too, that sense of hopelessness, but also that sense of being unable to embrace life really, even though you are right there in the midst of the wilderness. And I think so that poem picks up the theme of your undiagnosed chronic illness, but it also beautifully folds it into the natural world. So can you tell me a bit about the relationship between those two things as you see them?
Yes, of course, that word drained in itself, or the metaphor that surrounds that, is taken from wetlands. It's what happens to wetlands when they're being destroyed. So it was a good place to start thinking about the relationship between my illness and the wetland. At the stage that I was writing, my illness was undiagnosed as anything other than chronic fatigue, which is a very vague label. Although one part of the diagnosis, which was sleep apnea, would be reached during the writing process, the other part, which was fibromyalgia, was a diagnosis that came after the writing process. And apart from the fatigue itself, there were and still are random acute pains in different parts of my body, dryness of the mouth and itchiness, which kept me awake at night, and sometimes a kind of hypnagogic state and a host of other symptoms, which I won't go into in too much detail. There would be days when I would look like I was functioning normally, but I'd crash in a heap in the evening. And there were other days which were total wipeouts. I know there's a whole genre of nature cure books, but Yunjidup isn't quite one of them. I wasn't cured by visiting the wetlands, but I certainly drew solace for them, and they gave me a reason to persevere. I think the fact that the appeal for funds to buy them was successful meant that I could breathe out and rejoice in the knowledge that Yunjidup was protected forever, unlike other wild places I'd loved, which had then been destroyed. And as the dry season advanced, though, and the bodies of open water shrank alarmingly, there was a strange sort of identification between the wetlands' own need for replenishment and my own need for some kind of replenishment.
And the listener can't hear, but you've got a lot of capital letters and hyphens also throughout your poems, which contribute to making them feel really like Emily Dickinson. It seemed to me, though, as I was reading it, that this kind of close observation really has scientific importance too. Why do you think it is that we need poets to closely observe and record what they see in the natural world?
It's probably worth prefacing this with the fact that Dickinson herself was fascinated with science. You know, she's got poems that suggest she's perhaps been up in a hot air balloon. She's got poems about the telegraph, poems that reference early anesthetics and that sort of thing. So there is a kind of precedent there. As a person who was raised in a scientific household where some leading biologists were regular visitors to our house when I was growing up, I think I've always been in that kind of liminal space between the scientific and the poetic. And poets and biologists have one major prerequisite in common. They both need to be really acute observers, whether it's of a habitat or a bird or an insect, or of one's own symptoms or one's spiritual condition. It's no coincidence that Emily Dickinson was fascinated by the science of her own time, like hot air balloons, anesthetics, and the telegraph. So there's common grounds between the poems of John Clare and the scientific observations in Gilbert White's The Natural History of Selborne. Gilbert White described a harvest mouse in its nest for the first time, which is a little ball of grass. And John Clare wrote a poem about that same phenomenon, which gave it breath. I also think it's a good moment to mention, I think it's delightful that my book is being published on the same day as Prem's book, Vampire Squid, because their poems also inhabit that hinterland between poetry and science. And both of us are interested in watery worlds. And in this age, which kind of teeters on the brink of mass extinction, there's an urge to write down our observations of how the natural world affects us. It's a way of fighting against the shifting baseline syndrome, to kind of say very precisely, this is how my world is now. this is its beauty and its intricacy, and I'm making sure it won't be forgotten.
This is not being recorded because soon we won't have it, but it's being recorded because it's precious and we must keep it. And I think that's what you do really well. What do you hope that readers will take away from your book?
Life can be really hard sometimes, and it's that sense of wonder which certainly sustains me and makes life worth living. And in a place like Yunjidup, I feel that I can always at least transcend my pain and fatigue, even if I can't be healed by it. And it's that sense of wonder which will motivate people also, I think, to save what is left of our wildernesses in a society which seems to have essentially been at war with wilderness for so long. And it seems that fear and terror are insufficient motives for saving habitats and species, because if fear and terror were going to motivate us, they would have done so by now. There's still a mining company operating right beside Yunjidup that wants to do blasting, which would disrupt the lives of the bitterns that live there. So I hope that by reading Yunjidup, more people will connect with that sense of wonder in their own lives. For me, it's the reason for being, and poetry is my means of expressing it.
Giles, I'd love it if you could read us another one of your poems.
Okay, well, very few people are lucky enough to see an Australasian bittern, but I did manage to catch a glimpse of one. Ironically, it was not in the wetland itself, but beside a concrete bridge where the stream that drains the wetland passes under a road. It had been catching fish that were trapped in puddles as the stream had dried, but I only saw the bittern flying away and its footprints. This poem is in dialogue with Seamus Heaney's translation of an Irish Gaelic poem called The Yellow Bittern. It's called Australasian Bittern. Cryptic bittern, living puzzle, breath of moonlight, hidden riddle, conundrum on extinction's edge, lurking by a concrete bridge. I didn't mean to fright you, bittern, or interrupt your patient fishing. I'll wait a lifetime here to glimpse you, muddy mottled glyph of wishing. I hope, bittern, I can find you, find and leave you undisturbed, to behold but not to solve you, ancient, noble, fleeting bird. Teach me, bittern, how to tell a world which drains and looks away, how to halt, behold you, bittern, so you linger, never fly. Lend me breath of booming bittern, so that I might cast a spell of mottled umbers, wet and seeping, deliverance from concrete hell. Take me to your reed bed, bittern. Let me sway as reed stems do. Teach me arts of disappearing and treading lightly, light as you.
And that quest for it runs throughout the whole book. It's just lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, I was pretty much dreaming bitterns by the end of it.
Yeah, and that absolutely comes through in your beautiful work, which is one of my favourite books of the year. I'm so excited for other people to read
it.
Thank you, Giles, so much for sharing more about Yunjidup.
Thank you, Georgia.
Which is available now from all good bookstores and online. I'm Georgia Richter, and I look forward to joining you next time on the Fremantle Press podcast.